Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Don't Fuck It Up. So this week is going to be slightly different to our usual episodes. We are here with Vinegar Strokes, our previous
guest. Hello, I'm back. I'm back, you bitches.
We're here to discuss what is going on in the world at the minute. It's going a bit... The world is a bit crazy at present.
Yeah.
I haven't released an episode since then because I didn't know how to kind of go around talking about what's going on. And I didn't feel right releasing a happy-go-lucky, fun podcast when things like this are going on. So I took a week off, thought about how to do this, and then I have asked Vinegar to join us today to kind of break down how we do this, how we support any movement or charity or anything that's helping. And to talk about your new campaign, it could be.
So here we are. We're here.
So if you've been living under a rock, I think most people will know what has happened, that 46-year-old George Floyd on May the 25th was murdered by a police officer. And this has been felt across the world. It's unbelievable how much support has been seen. It's okay to say that America has felt it and they're protesting, but for all the UK, for even Belfast, that is strange.
Because there are black people in Ireland, people.
Exactly.
People in Ireland, and they've got a sexy accent, which I enjoy. So,
so it's amazing to see the amount of support that is being throughout the world, and I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts and feelings on how everything has transcribed from that moment to now.
I mean it's a very interesting subject, because it almost feels like this is something which is new for some people, which is ridiculous, because this has been going on for longer than we've been alive. Do you know what I mean? This has been a long time coming. I think this is definitely the silver lining of COVID, definitely the silver lining of having to be isolated and having to be at home and having to only really have, as company, you know, your social media, your Twitter, and all these different stories. I can't tell you how many other videos I've seen of black people being brutalized, pushed, shoved, slapped, grabbed by the neck, maced, tasered, stopped and searched. George Floyd video is not the first one. We've seen this time and time and time again. But because our lives are always so busy, we live in these cities and we have these jobs where we have to, you know, we kind of give up our own kind of personal time to give up to someone else to make them money and that kind of stuff. We don't get time to like sit and be quiet for a second and just have a think about things and meditate on what's actually happening in the world. I'm the same, you know. Before lockdown, I was touring all over the place. I was going abroad all the time. I was back and forth, up and down from London, up north, Europe, all over the place. You know, I was literally busy. So I reckon if this George Floyd video would have happened during a normal day-to-day life before lockdown, or if lockdown didn't exist, it would just be another video we would look at and go, oh my God, that's really awful. Retweet it and then swipe up and carry on with our day. So in a way, I'm really thankful in the way that we've had COVID, and obviously I'm sending out so much love to people who have lost people during COVID, and during this awful time, because it is terrible that people have passed away from this. But on the flip side, you know, the silver lining of COVID is that we are finally having this kind of awareness raised about the history of racism. And the main point that I would take away from this, and something I'm really kind of adamant about, is that the only way that there is going to be a change is that we really focus on the education and the self-awareness side of it. Because again, there's even facts that I didn't know. I'm learning as I go along and speaking to people and watching different videos. trying to read as many things as I can, books and articles and that kind of stuff, and actually learn what is the real Black history. When it says Black History Month, what are we really celebrating in Black History Month? Because from what I've been learning, we're not being told what's actually the real history here. We need to go back and go, okay, we're in school, and this is what I heard from a lovely lady called Jane Elliott, and you have to go and look her up. She is a white woman who literally, her phrase is, there is no race, it's the human race. And she does all these kind of exercises, like, which have been going on from like the 80s and 70s, you know, blue eyes and brown eyes. She'll go into a school and she'll segregate the kids into who's got brown eyes, who's got blue eyes, and she'll make adjustments so that the people with brown eyes can get further in the class, mm-hmm. and people with blue eyes will not be able to go as further as the thing. And it's as simple as that, and making an alignment with something simple as eye color, which we can't control unless you've got a contact lens in. And she basically said, you know, we go to school from the ages 5 to 18, and it's almost like we're not getting an education, but it's more of like a indoctrination of what these kind of people who have written these history books are telling us what we should know about Black history or history in general. But what they're leaving out, so many facts which are absolutely true, because they only want us to know a certain amount. Don't want us to know too much, because we know too much, that affects things in the long run when you kind of leave school and go out and, you know, create work and whatever, create wealth and that kind of stuff. So when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, that's absolutely like true. That's such a fair point. For me, it's like I said, it's all about the education side, and it's all about knowing that, you know, Black people built up America for 400 years, and then for those 50 years afterwards, they had the chance of a bit of a slice of the pie, a bit of a crumb, so they can, you know, have their own land, have their own property, to actually own something. Mm-hmm. And then when the white people did not enjoy the way the Black people were building their wealth, they burnt everything down. They slaughtered countless amounts of people. But we don't know that, because that's not in the history books. We're not taught that in year 7, year 8, year 9. We're just taught, well, there was slavery, and there were some people who owned slaves and were slave traders, and they've got a statue in Bristol, which thank God has been torn down.
Yes.
They've got statues everywhere, and that, because, and it's propaganda that we're able to see and idolize these slave traders, when actually, if you look at the history of these certain cities, Black people built up that city for the benefit of white people. But we're in 2020 now. It's a different generation, different era. So why are we still celebrating these people who, yeah, sure, they made this city how it is, but should they be celebrated? I don't know. I don't think they should be.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, so as I always say, it's the educational side which really needs to be looked at. And I think there's a thing of, you know, we are slaves to a system in a way, and that's, you know, whatever colour you are, whoever you are, we're slaves to a system. The educational system, the police system. You know, if you buy into a systematic wet approach of learning and living, you then take on what you're being told by someone who has created that system. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you're living by an educational system, you're only going to absorb what they tell you. You're not going to go outside of that to go, oh, do you know what, I really like science, I really love chemistry, but let me find out what else is there about chemistry that I don't know, which I'm not being told at school, because there's not enough time, not enough resources or textbooks. So I think there has to be a change in the whole way that we educate children. And that for me is going to be the start of how we get to a place that we want to get to, because I do think there's a majority who want to see a change. I don't think it's a majority of people who want to celebrate racism and want to keep a racist kind of vibe amongst a community, because, you know, it gets no one anywhere. So yeah, it's just a case of, I think what's happened now is there's a huge chunk of white people who are really realizing that white privilege is a real thing.
Yes.
And I want to highlight someone like Monroe Bergdorf, who said that she said this as a statement that all white people are racist because of complicity. What's the word? Complicity. I can't say it right. You know what I mean? they're being complicit in white privilege. Now, a lot of people kicked off. What the hell are you talking about? I'm not racist, and it's because you're not even listening to what this woman's saying. She's not saying that you are racist per se in terms of you go around going N word this, N word that, you know, P word, all these kind of words. Up. What she's saying is that there's a white privilege that you are complicit in using to gain and move forward, but you're not calling out the fact that actually what a white person is going to have a couple of steps forward compared to a black person because there's this kind of social conditioning of how a black person is. I mean, I was even chatting to a friend of mine on my radio show, another drag friend of mine, and she was saying about even being like one of the four black boys in her school, and each one of them would be in detention from say like year seven to year nine because of behavioral differences. Now that to me, I started thinking, oh, okay, that's weird. But if you really break that down, if you're a white child, if I'm a white child at school, and I'm always seeing that the black kid is in detention all the time, I'm subconsciously gonna have a opinion about a black boy, to say, or a black person, because that person's always in, I can go home, oh dad, mom, I've just seen my this black boy in my school, he's always in detention. Do you know what I mean? So you have a subconscious opinion about the black boy is always in detention, which means he must be trouble, he must be causing trouble, he must be unruly, he must be lazy, he must be this and that. So already you're having a opinion about a type of person without actually realizing that around that, he's not being put in detention because he's been unruly or you know, been an asshole or whatever. He's being in detention because he's black. And he's probably said something out of line that the teachers don't like. Whereas if the white child would have said that, they would have been like, oh, okay, no stars for you today, or you'll get marked down on your test. But there is that kind of thing of, we'll put the black guy in detention, but we won't put the white kid in there. Now, obviously, that's like a general sweeping. But if you really look at it from a white kid's point of view, to seeing a black kid being always put into detention, especially when the school is majority white as well. When I was at school, my school was very. I mean, I'm from North London, so my school's very multicultural. We had every colour under the sun. So actually, if a kid was in detention, you'll be in detention, and there'll be 100 other people in there who have different faces and whatnot. Mm. But if you're a minority child in a school and you're always in detention, imagine that black kid is in detention every single week, and you're that white kid going, well, the black kid's always in detention, and that's the line you always say. And so you're already like kind of conditioned to go in, okay, cool. So this is how black people are, and children will take things along with them up until they're teenagers and adulthood. So it's almost like you've got to unlearn all of that kind of opinion that you've made as a child. Mm-hmm. So when you come into as an adult, when it comes to a movement like this, you've actually got to unlearn everything, every kind of opinion or whatever that you've learned over the years, to then comfortably say, oh, actually, I do support this movement, and I do realise that it's not one type of black person who is getting brutalised, who is getting abused by the police, killed, stopped and searched, that kind of stuff. Actually, it could happen to anyone.
Yeah, and like you just mentioned there, in my eyes, no one is born racist. It's taught.
You're not born racist. Like, you don't know it.
It comes from parents, your peers, your friends, whoever it is, and like you say, school can reinforce that by treating a black kid completely different than a white kid.
Yeah, and you got to remember race. Yeah, sorry, but you got to remember that also racism comes in many different guises. Like,
yeah.
I think when people hear racist, they think of someone who is literally going saying all these expletives and N word and that kind of stuff. As the song says in Avenue Q the musical, everyone's a little bit racist. I've even said things which have been like, oh, you shouldn't say that, but that's the sense of humor. That you have, and that's kind of vibe that you grew up with friends. Like, you know, I mean, my core group at secondary school, there was me, the black kid, there was the white kid, there was the Indian kid, and there was the poor white kid, and we all used to rip the piss out of each other for every single thing, because that's what boys do essentially.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between it being like that and also being that you hold on to the opinion. So you might say, oh, you're white and poor and your mum's a slag. You might say that, but it's only become something if you hang on to that as a true opinion. Mm. And like I said, racism comes in so many different guises, it literally can go from having an opinion about a certain type of person because you've kind of learned that from school, or you're at the extreme when you're giving it KKK and that kind of stuff,
yeah.
Which thankfully we don't have in this country, thank God, but there are people on all ends of the spectrum and in the middle there. So yeah, it's that kind of thing where, like I said, you kind of have to unlearn everything to relearn, and the only way I can see that happening is through education, conversation, and just being open to being uncomfortable as well.
From my point of view, looking at this through a social media gaze, it's so shocking to see how many people still have a narrow mindset, because the next time I see someone type "All Lives Matter" on Facebook or Twitter, I'm going to explode. Like, every time I'm trying to educate someone on why not to say something so stupid, because it's the same white person that says that was trying to kick immigrants out of Britain, or is against anyone of any other race. But as soon as someone says Black Lives Matter, they're jumping on the bandwagon and being like, well, yeah, I don't matter. But no one said you don't matter. No one ever said that.
Exactly. It's the thing where you've got a street and you've got four houses. You've got four houses, and the second house is the house which is on fire. Now, all of these houses matter, but this house is on fire right now, so we're going to help this one house here. Your houses are absolutely great. We love your houses, and they do matter. But right now, they don't matter. This house matters. I loved, I went to one of the protests last week, and I love one of the signs I saw. I hope I get this right. The sign basically said, we said Black Lives Matter. We know all lives matter, but right now, Black Lives Matter. You can't get to All Lives Matter until Black Lives Matter matters. Do you know what I mean? You can't get there. How can you get there if you still have this one here? And I think what it is, it's people who are just trying to ruffle the feathers, and people who just literally are so blind to what is actually happening in the world. And it's easy for people to be like that, because if it doesn't directly affect them, it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's easy for someone to say all lives matter, because Black Lives Matter doesn't affect them directly, you know. But if that, but, and it's so funny that I've even heard a lot of gay men say this kind of stuff, like online. I'm like, if this, and I guarantee you, if this was a gay issue, like an LGBT issue, or something like that, I guarantee you they'll be like, gay lives matter, also about LGBT and that kind of stuff. And I don't think they're realizing that actually, for me, Black Lives Matter is in the same house as LGBTQI plus issues.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
It's all in the same wheelhouse. It's just wearing two different jackets, but it's the same thing for me.
And it's people that are saying that these protests shouldn't happen, that you should be doing this online, you should be doing it at your front door. But
no,
these major issues, like gay rights, all started from riots. There was riots, 10 days after Martin Luther King died, and that then brought in every kind of right, essentially, that the black people in America have. This is how people stand up and shout from the rooftops, because everyone has tried doing it silently and it didn't work. So this is what it's led to.
Listen, it makes me laugh, because you've got white gay people, white gay men especially, cisgendered white men who are, again, very privileged, who are saying all lives matter, and obviously I'm not saying all white gay guys are saying that, but I've heard a few, and you know, and I don't think they remember that Stonewall was started. That riot was basically started by a black trans woman.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to stick that as a thing, because obviously we don't know what language she would use back in the day, but I think we can probably assume that she was a trans woman. So a black person who is trans as well has literally allowed and paved the way for you, Mr. White cisgendered man, who's got an issue, got a problem because a statue's been torn down. If it wasn't for her, you wouldn't be able to do what you're doing now. You would not be able to go marry your boyfriend. You wouldn't be able to wear that pink top. You wouldn't be able to go into a gay bar and kiss your boyfriend. So you all need to remember that actually what you're allowed to do now stems from a black person sorting it out. And I was talking to a lovely poet, Ebony Stewart, who's from Texas, and we basically sat there and we were like, it just seems to me black people who start these riots change everything. And we were like, yeah, actually all the main changes that have benefited white people are started by black people. So why the hell can you not jump on and go, do you know what, I do support this movement, because this movement, yeah, sure, it will. If this movement goes the way I'm hopeful that it will go in the years to come, it's not only going to benefit black people, it's going to benefit everyone.
100%.
Of course it's going to benefit everyone.
It just goes to show.
It has to.
With the changes that are starting to come in slowly in the States, with, I think it was New York has banned any kind of chokehold resistance for policemen. LA has said that they will take some of the funding away from the $1.8 billion that the LAPD is given from state money. And it just goes to show that these rats are actually doing something. But of course, the media are only showing when it becomes violent, and they're portraying everything in the wrong light.
And on top of that, you've got to remember what we are, again, it's another thing, like goes back to the educational thing. We only are really kind of fed selective things, okay? Unless you really kind of go into the deep depths of Twitter, you're only really going to find the stuff with the juice, the stuff which is the real stuff. You will need to see it. But if you go on the news, go on the thing, there's a lot of editing going along. It's a bit like when people go on Drag Race and they go and produce themselves to be a certain way. It's the same thing, where people will produce a certain perspective for you to look at, and on top of that, they'll only show a certain type of black person who is getting arrested, who is getting that. I saw a video today of a woman getting stopped and searched. I was tweeting this actually. She got stopped and searched. Gorgeous car, gorgeous black woman, great hair, glasses. She was stunning. She got stopped and searched. The policeman was like, have you got a car? She's like, I'm the state attorney.
I seen that video.
And he's like, oh shit, you could literally hear shit, fuck, in his mind. But this is the thing. And this is why my campaign is so adamant on that. Because again, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're black in the wrong place at the wrong time, something potentially could happen to you from as routine as a stop and search, all the way up to having a knee on your neck. And it's as simple as that. And I think what's not being shown and fed to us, which I think the public deserve to see, is what is the real footage, what is the real stuff. You only, and again, unless you go trawling for these images and these videos, you're only going to see what someone has produced you to see. And it's, you know, it's just common sense, really. Like, you know, if something is said and you see one type of person talking or getting arrested, chances are you're going to see, if the camera does that, like literally pans to the left, it's a completely different story. So, this is the thing with this whole thing. Like I keep saying, it's all about the education and the conversation. I think there were white people. I mean, I was, again, talking to another friend of mine who's black, and he was saying he spent about 4 days just being really angry at his white friends. And he lives in Bath, so he's in a very kind of white part of the country. And then I always joke with him and say, like, oh, every time I come to Bath, like, I literally bring up the black population by three. So it's me, him, and his mum. Jeremy, it's me, him, and his mum, and we are the black population of Bath. So we always chuckle about that, which is great. But, like, we were saying, like, this is... oh God, what were we saying? We were basically saying that I've literally lost the train of thought now. What was it? We'll go back to it.
Yes.
No, that was it. I found it. It came back. Basically, he was very angry for like 4 days that his white friends were just not speaking up, whereas he's been friends with them for, say, you know, 15, 20 years and that kind of stuff. But they literally were not saying anything. And there is this thing, I think, with white people where you don't realise that the power of a white voice saying, I stand by this, this is wrong, is so powerful. But again, I don't know what the fear is, because if this was a gay LGBT situation where loads of gay men were getting arrested, trans people getting arrested, killed, that kind of, which obviously that is happening. I guarantee you, people will be like, right, I'm not having this. This is wrong, and the protests will go through the roof. But there's something about when a white person hears the word black, and it's not followed by eyeliner or keys in a piano or black paint. It's not followed by something else. When they just hear the word black, they don't know what to do with that. And that's the thing we need to start breaking. And that comes with conversation. And I think it comes to a conversation where, you know, you need to angle it a certain way. You almost need to go in for a point of view of, it's okay for you to talk to, it's almost talking to like a child. It's okay for you to talk about this. It's absolutely fine. You know, I've had friends who have written poetry and done lots of creative stuff. They come to me to ask if it's okay to post. Just post it. Just absolutely post it. I'm not reading it. Just post it. If this is what is it, this is how you're feeling, you post it, because if I want to say on Twitter, fuck the police or whatever like that, I'm not gonna come, or fuck the white police, I'm not gonna come to you and say, hi, you're white. Can I ask you if this is okay to say? I'm just gonna say it. Do you know what I mean? So if this is what you feel in your heart of hearts, you post it, because you know that is a powerful thing to have a white person say, I absolutely back this. I absolutely think this is wrong. I believe in human rights. And that's the thing. If you look at it from a human rights point of view, you would stick up for every type of person, you know, race, sexuality, gender, you know, fat, thin, whatever. You would stick up for everyone if you really believed in human rights. And I think that's a question that people need to ask themselves. Where is my belief in actual human rights? Am I racist? You know, actually ask yourself, am I racist? Like, you may have black friends, you may have enjoyed that korma from the curry shop last week, but are you racist? And then from there, you if you go, okay, yeah, actually I have this opinion. And again, being racist does not mean that you go around going, you know, white power and N-word, this kind of stuff. But it can mean that you have an opinion about a certain race, which you might need to undo.
Yeah.
And then when you undo that, you've then got the space to go, I'm here to support this person or support this community. But it has to start from the person.
Like he says, it's all about education. And if people are actually open to learning about anything, it can change their opinion.
Do you know what? Put down Harry Potter, because J.K. Rowling is a fucking transphobic bitch. And pick up a book about, why I'm not speaking about race to white people. Pick up a good book. go and watch a really good show. You know, stop watching Family Guy. This is to me now. Stop watching Family Guy and watch a great documentary. You know, or go on to Twitter and find some really inspirational black women speakers who can tell you from their experience. There's so many angles. If you're gay or queer, listen to some queer black artists. Listen, read some poetry. There's so many different accesses to it, and you know, you got to remember, everybody's learning is different. Everybody's undoing of what they learned is different. Everybody's activism is different. The way I'm kind of, I wouldn't even say that I'm an activist, but the way I'm doing my campaign and my kind of humanitarian work, which is how I see it, is different to how someone else would do it, who would do it from a proper, like, I'm an activist, I'm this and that, and they're very passionate about that. Everybody's things look very different, and they're allowed to look different. I think it's then just taking the point to go, I'm accepting that this is different, and I'm gonna listen, and I'm gonna try and absorb as much as I can. And if you can't absorb that, there'll be something else that you can digest elsewhere. I think it's just not going, oh, I'll just stop now. I'll just stop. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a very kind of, oh God, it's just a really tricky thing to let people know that it's okay, that you're uncomfortable with it. And that's our point. I'm uncomfortable with stuff. Like, even though, yeah, I've done this campaign, doesn't mean I'm comfortable going forward, hearing things, watching things and doing things with it, because I'm having to, you know, put my emotions on the side and go, okay, let's look at this factually. Let's look at this from a very kind of, like, I don't want to say cold, but just a kind of, like, you know, non-emotional point of view, because, you know, it can be quite triggering. It can be, you know, really harmful for someone's mental health, because it's a really difficult time. But, you know, you just have to do it. You have to get out there and absorb something, because what it means is that, you know, there's people out there who you're close to, friends, family, future partners, you know, the doctor you go to, your school teacher, your students, you know, your favorite bartender, you know, your personal trainers. There are people out there who are absolutely affected by this, but still get up and go to work the next day, and still put a face on for the world, to please that white person who will feel uncomfortable. Do you know what I mean? So it's important to really get out there and just do something with it.
Yeah. And before we kind of touch on your campaign, I wanted to ask, in personal terms, as a person of color yourself, and obviously your family, have you ever experienced any form of the systemic racism that we're kind of seeing in the States the world?
So obviously I'm from North London, so a lot of my I'm from a very kind of multicultural part of London, so you know, it's not like I was the only black boy in my school. I wasn't the only black boy in college, and I definitely got accused of stealing a girl's purse in there. And I remember one of the boys saying, "Yeah, but you're black and you've got money, so you definitely stole it." And I was like, "One, I work in Pizza Hut. I'm a waiter in fucking Pizza Hut. So these are my tips. And fuck you, like, absolutely not." Luckily for me, you know, the tutors absolutely believed me, because, you know, I obviously did not do this. But that was quite good. But what if they didn't believe me? What if they were like, well, maybe you did steal it?
Yeah.
Because bear in mind, I'm a certain kind of way. I'm a certain kind of black guy where I am gay, I'm flamboyant, you know. You know, I'm a bit like filth in terms of, like, oh yeah, look at that big. Do you know what I mean? I'm a certain kind of personality, which I think is quite appealing to a white person, because Daniel's jolly, Daniel's this, Daniel's that. You know, so that's very kind of appealing for that way. But what if I wasn't? What if I was just regular? You know, I didn't really talk much, or I just enjoyed kind of being in my headphones, my music, or I enjoyed just playing games on my Nintendo or something like that. am I a thief or a gangbanger because of that? No, mm-hmm. maybe I'm just a very quiet, shy person who loves computer games. Do you know what I mean? And that's yeah. and that's the yeah. big difference in that you make a. I think we always make a snap judgment on someone's personality anyway, but when you add a color in there as well, and if you've already got an opinion in your head that you've grown up with about someone, this black person is already on the back foot already mm. with you or whatever. So yeah, so I definitely have got it at like drama school where like, you know, they would put on like a certain play. Oh, we'll just get Daniel to play the slave role. I fucking smashed it, by the way. I was like, it was a good slave role. Like I had a great time doing it because I'm a very, very good actor. But you know, you do go a bit like, are you just casting that because I'm black? Are you casting that because you think I'm talented at the part? Mm. So you just kind of go with that. But obviously, when you're young and you're away from home and you don't really, for me, you already grow up to try and please white people anyway, with whatever that is. Especially because I wanted to go into the arts and go into performing arts. So a lot of the people that you would associate with are white people and they're white parents. So you already have that that thing of you want to be a certain type of way in front of these people so that they, you know, kind of take you in, which is kind of how I grew up and how I did it. Did it do me any harm? No, it didn't, because I definitely made the best type of friends I needed at that time. But I wish I was a bit more prouder to be black at that time. Do you know what I mean? And that's another thing that I think having that really, it's a shame that it takes it away from a young black kid who is trying to be like, I'm not like my black friends. I'm using black in like overt commas, because there's that type of black kid who's like, yeah, you know, rap music and that kind of stuff. The kind of stereotype, that's what I mean. You know, I'm not really like that because I like drama. Oh, and I'm gay and I like Spice Girls, and it's kind of strange. So you just kind of have to mold yourself into this kind of thing where you're not going to get beat up by the black kids, the black boys especially, who are like proper, like, you know, cool guys, and you're like the geek who likes drama and music and art and is gay and a bit fat. So you do kind of like mold yourself to please other people, which actually I wish I kind of was like, fuck all of you, I'm just gonna be me. I think I've done that definitely over the last like 15 years. But you know, you do kind of, you know, it's just another layer on top of going, oh, I'm gay as well, so this is great. But then also, I'm not as black as I should be. I'm not as white as I want to be, because I feel like that's the way to get forward. Mm-hmm. So it's a shame that, you know, this kind of stuff, this kind of systemic racism does kind of take that away from you in a way. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, like, you know, I think my brother's had like a hard time with like police sometime and like security guards in a local town. I remember once he got like held down, pinned down by a couple of security guards as well. He had like literally bite his way out of the situation and that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happens that people probably don't realize, but it happens. You pick yourself up, you carry on, and you learn, and you just go from there. And I'm just grateful now that I've kind of got to a point where I'm very happy with myself. I don't feel like I'm like non-black. I don't feel like I'm white either. I just feel like I'm me. And that's the thing we want to get to. Wouldn't it be great to get to a place where you can just be black, but no one's going, you're black. you're just going, hi. Hi Joe, hi whatever your name is, because when you're white, I don't think you've ever had to think, I'm white. maybe in Spain when you might get burnt by the sun, but apart from that, you don't go around thinking, I'm white, so I probably shouldn't be here. I'm just allowed to just kind of walk freely and have that freedom to do it.
That just screams white privilege. It's the people that don't understand what white privilege is. It is literally that. It's not being scared to, people not being scared to stand in an elevator with you, people not accusing you of something because they think you did it because of your skin color, because of a stereotype that they have in their head. Like there was a, I think it was a video on Twitter of a newscast from the riots, I think it was in New York, and there was a white woman walking out of looting one of the stores, and the newscaster was like, oh, I hope that she's not Luton. Maybe she's a staff member. Whereas that when it's a black, if it was a black person walking out of that store, she wouldn't be saying that.
It would grab there straight away.
Exactly. So it's, it frustrates me as a white person seeing people just, it feels like they've got their eyes closed and their ears covered, like they don't want to hear. It's just like, yeah, open your eyes.
Like America is very, I think America is quite different from the UK in 100%. Terms of, America's history with racism is deep. Like it cuts very, very deep. It always seems to be, you know, us and them over there in that way. And I think what needs that it's a thing where it's going to be a long road ahead. Mm-hmm. But the great thing is about all this is that actually we're having this conversation. The fact that me and you are having this conversation is such an amazing thing, you know? And that's the kind of start. If there were more people just having conversations about what their identity is with race, whether that's an opinion they've had, whether they're unlearning things, whether they don't like, whether they've got an insecurity of themselves being a certain race, whatever. This is like the fact that people are openly talking about it is a really great thing. The fact that there's platforms that are offering themselves like radio shows and TV and podcasts and interviews and papers and, you know, interviews and that kind of stuff, not even just to talk to me, but to talk to other people out there who have experiences with race and want to put out their two pennies from all sides is important. And that's where it all starts. Again, I go back to it. It's the education and the awareness side of it. Yep. And that's for me, that's the way to get through it. And to also allow white people to make mistakes. You know, I'm not talking about the white people who are actively go out to be racist and be like, you know, overtly racist and vile to people, but the people who simply just don't know, the people who simply are a bit naive, a bit ignorant, but are willing to learn and unlearn things and kind of change from that respect. It's okay if a white person doesn't know something, but it's not okay if they don't know something but don't want to know how to learn that fact about it. You know what I mean?
Touching on that, what I wanted to get your opinion on some things that are like happening in the media in terms of white famous people being fired from certain TV shows and reality shows because of past actions and past tweets that have been revealed from like 10 years ago. What was your opinion on them and being kind of fired for actions that happened then?
It's tricky because I think it goes down to an individual basis.
Case by case kind of basis.
Case by case. Now, going back to what I said, and this kind of proves it right, a white person isn't going to tweet out a certain tweet if they didn't have a conditioning from when they were younger or before. Do you know what I mean? You're not going to... I mean, there was that girl, that black girl who was in Colour Purple in Leicester, who got fired from her job because she tweeted out a whole bunch of homophobic things.
Yeah,
and that stuff because of her background is very religious. You know, she's had an exposure to a preconditioned way of growing up and a preconditioned notion that, you know, that our community is wrong and her opinion is formed from that. She wasn't born homophobic, do you know what I mean? She's learned that as a conditioning thing. So a white person is not going to tweet something out in their 20s or 30s, whatever, if they hadn't have been preconditioned to that opinion from a very long time ago. Do I think it's right that they got fired from their job? Again, it's case by case. If the tweet, I mean, I don't know who in particular are you referring to.
There has been multiple cases literally over the past few days. That I think there was a reality show on Bravo called Vanderpump Rules. Four of their cast members have been fired for past actions. I think there was two of the guys were involved in racial tweets, and then two of the girls were in terms of filing a false police report on one of their black cast members because they thought it was a black person that done it. So they filed a police report on the only black cast member.
Absolutely. Yes. You deserve to get fired. You deserve to get let go from this thing. Because why are you now given a platform for you to spread more of this bollocks? You know, I think, that, and there's another thing with white privilege. Those two girls filing police reports know for a fact, we know that if a police officer is called on a black person, mm-hmm. they're going to be harder and harsher on that black person unless that guy was white.
Yeah.
That is just a fact. I stand by that and I say it with no regret. It is a fact that a police officer will go harder. Is this an American show as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to go harder on the black person, especially a black guy, especially for two white girls, young girls. I mean, there was that video about that woman who was walking her dog off the leash in Central Park.
Central Park.
And the black guy was like, bird watching.
Yeah.
Ear, obviously, he's not from London, but ear, can you put your dog on a leash? And I'm going to call the police and tell them an African-American man is threatening my life. Notice the wording, an African-American man. She just said, I'm going to call the police and said, a man is trying to threaten my life. Okay, fine. But she knows the language to use. She knows that if the police come and arrest this black guy, he's going to get in way more trouble than if he was white. So yeah, absolutely. Like if that's the case for these people who've been fired from here, then yeah, absolutely. They deserve all of it because platforms are meant to be for good or for entertainment. If you can't provide any of that, do one. Do you know what I mean? Get a muggle job and piss off.
Yeah.
I do think though, it's tricky, like in terms of the long run of like, because you do hear like different celebrities who have got like Roseanne and that kind of like people had like actual careers, you know, say things on Twitter or social media, which can be quite detrimental. I think I just think if you've got social media, don't use it to talk. Like just literally say what show you're gonna do. You can catch me at this gig here, then leave. Don't say anything. Or retweet something funny.
Yeah.
Why are you talking on there? Do you know what I mean? You don't need to speak. No one cares what you're saying in the long run. But yeah, I do think you've got to be responsible for what you're doing. If you're putting out tweets or even before you're famous or while you're famous, you are responsible regardless. And if you're saying, oh, I've reformed, I'm not racist, that was 15 years ago, it doesn't matter. It does matter because you had that opinion and clearly you've not changed your opinion because you've not unlearned anything. You're not showing any signs that you've unlearned that. So just by talking that out, I think I'm going to say yes, they are deserving to lose the jobs. Basically, I had to talk all that out just to reach a decision. Yes, they
deserve that. And flying right back to your campaign. So you started this campaign, It Could Be.
Yes.
For anyone that doesn't know, can you explain what the thought process and what the campaign actually is?
Yeah, I'll take you back to how it all came about. So 2 weeks prior to the George Floyd video that came out, I was watching the news, BBC News, and these two black guys in Lewisham in South London were being stopped and searched by the police. So they managed to film the whole thing, and they were talking to the press as well, to the reporters about it. And so turns out these two guys were two school teachers who were working in the community. They were working to actually help the police. To actually like help the police, kind of combat knife crime and gun crime and gang violence and that kind of stuff. So they were working with them. But because they were black and in Lewisham in the wrong place, wrong time, and the white police felt the need to exercise a profiling exercise or whatever that might be, they felt the need to stop and search these two guys. So I had this thought, oh my God, like if I was in that area, that could easily have been me who's profiled, you know, just because I'm black. And bear in mind, I'm a drag queen, I'm an actor, you know, entertainer, singer, I can bake a cake, I've got a degree, I've got, you know, a great educational background, I've been to drama school, great family, I've got all these great elements about me, But the fact of the matter is, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, if you're black, you're probably going to get stopped and searched, mm-hmm. or you're more likely to be stopped and searched. And obviously, if you react in a certain way, that could be seen as threatening. So then it could escalate into something as hideous as what happened 2 weeks later to George Floyd. So when I saw that video, literally all I saw on that was just someone black. I didn't think of anything apart from someone that is black. And that could be me, could be my brother, could be my dad, uncle, best mate, you know, school teacher. It could be literally anyone, because at the end of the day, George Floyd was someone's dad, someone's son, someone's brother, someone's cousin, someone's employee. Do you know what I mean? It's probably someone's favorite customer at Starbucks. Who knows? It's someone else has a relation to in some shape or form. And that man was loved. Yet, because he's black, and again in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong type of people around, he's literally got a knee on his neck, and his last words are "I can't breathe," and calling for his mum, which is devastating. Yeah. So I wanted just to kind of add to the conversation. I was never the sort of person who was like, I'm going to be an activist and I'm going to try and do stuff for human rights, that kind of stuff. Never. Like, you know, because I kind of think, you know, what can I do? I'm just one person. What can I do? But yeah. I thought, you know what? I've got this platform with Drag Race. It can't all be about look at my tits, look at my hair, look at my makeup. There's got to be something else you can do with it. Do you know what I mean? So I thought, let me just put this thought out that I've had twice now. Mm-hmm. I'm having a physical reaction to this video. Let me just put out this thought and just say, do you know what? This is how I'm feeling with this. I look at this video. I could see any single black person I know underneath that knee. Mm-hmm. And also, you've got to remember, it's not just one type. I say this again. It's not just one type of black person. It's any type of black person who, again, is in the wrong place, wrong time. Mm. So I put this little thing out. And again, the campaign was probably going to be, like, in my eyes, a couple of days, get a few retweets, and then just kind of go on from there. And then just try and, like, maybe donate some cash. And that would be my lot, yeah. I suppose. Do and then no fast forward, I don't even know how long it's been. Has it been 2 weeks? I don't know. But fast forward, it's just literally snowballed into this thing that people are really latching onto. Mm-hmm. And I think what it does is it kind of humanizes what is actually happening, because it's very easy to see it on Twitter and swipe past and be like, oh, that's awful, and swipe mm-hmm. past it and forget about it because you've got other things going on. Well, you humanize it and you attach someone's, you know, someone's friend or relation or whoever to the situation that's going on. Mm-hmm. Suddenly people can be like, oh, okay, I understand this. And I think it's more of a tangible way for white people especially to not feel uncomfortable, but also feel that they can have an opinion on this now, because actually it affects them just as much as it affects the black family who have lost their son or their brother or their dad. Do you get what I mean? So it kind of all came from there. And like, it's been so amazing the amount of support it's had just from people tweeting photos and that kind of stuff. But also people have been so generous. Like, I was just on Alphabet Radio. They're very generous to give me a 2-hour slot so I can just talk to other black artists and go through that. We're now turning that into a podcast because we want to keep the conversation moving and mm-hmm. going on. I think that's the main thing, which is important. I think if you can provide platforms for people to listen to or take part in, for conversation, that's when something keeps going. And obviously this campaign is really to support the Black Lives Matter movement. Yeah. So I'm just kind of putting out as much as I can with the platform I have, which supports that movement, because that's the main thing that I want to see flourish. Because mm-hmm. It's been going on since, what, 2012, I think it's been going on, like, officially. So still very, very kind of new and kind of embryonic in a way. So, you know, if this campaign adds to that, that's amazing for me. So and I'm happy to, you know, provide, you know, kind of split my platform up between Vinegar Strokes and this, because mm-hmm. It's important, you know. It's an important thing because there's so many black queer kids out there who, again, this affects them, because they're not only dealing with being black, it's also the queer side as well. So, yeah.
Anyone that wanted to get involved with It Could Be, how would they do that?
Yeah, so essentially go over to itcouldbe.net and you can get all the information about what the campaign is, you know, pictures and examples and that kind of stuff. If you want to learn about any organizations or charities to donate to or learn from as well, we've got three buttons at the bottom. You can find charities and organizations in the UK, Canada and the USA. So there's a whole plethora of things to choose from. Mm-hmm. And essentially, just kind of getting involved is as simple as getting a piece of paper, highlighting one Black person in your life, whether that's your friend or, say, my friend, my teacher, my yoga instructor, my favorite barista, my dad, my mom, my friend's dad, my boyfriend's dad, whatever you want. And just holding it up to a camera, take a selfie and just post it using the hashtags It Could Be and Black Lives Matter. Tag me in it as well, The Only Vinegar on Twitter. I will give you a retweet. And yeah, and just kind of keep that conversation going and keep that awareness going. And that's the best way to help. But again, like I said, the best way to help yourself, learn, educate, and unlearn what you've learned over the years, because what you've probably learned over the years is bollocks. So, you know.
And just before we kind of wrap up, I wanted to ask you to do one thing for me. I want to ask you to envision that you were standing with someone that has them kind of mindsets that we have been discussing, that is willing to learn and change, but they need someone to tell them that. How would you go around a conversation with someone like that? Like, what would you say to help them understand what this movement is?
I suppose, first of all, I would challenge their perception of what is happening. Like, you know, what is their perception of what they see with the Black Lives Matter movement? Are they seeing the full picture, or are they seeing what other people want them to see? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if their answers are, oh, well, it's, you know, it's just about, you know, Black people getting killed and that kind of stuff, I'll be like, no, this is what it's all about, because it's not just that. It stems from this, and it all comes from the educational side as well, and the history of it. Because the you know, I think a lot of times people look at the reason, look at what Black people are doing, without looking at the reason why they're doing it. So when we look at looters and that kind of stuff, we're not realizing that these are people who are in 2020 on the poverty line in 2020 in America, one of the richest countries in the world, yet they're on the poverty line because Black people were not allowed to create wealth, and if they did, it was taken away from them. And that's the can you imagine, you know, you've made this amazing cake and you've butter creamed it, you put the jam in it, you've baked it to perfection, it's absolutely gorgeous, you're so proud to have this, your first ever cake, and someone comes along and throws it out your hands. And it's taking you 50 hours to make that cake. And over that 50 hours, you've sweated, you've cried, you've missed phone calls from your friends, you've missed the birthday party, you've missed your favorite TV show, you've missed all the things you love because you've just wanted to make this one cake. And someone comes and shoves it at your hands. That's the reason why when you see a Black person looting, it's not because they want to loot. It's their only chance to get that TV or get that mattress or get that sofa, get that chair. It's their one chance, their one opportunity to get that thing that they will never be able to afford because they've never been able to be allowed to create wealth or buy a house or buy things for themselves or for their family. So I would really challenge people to learn that side of Black History Month, not just the glamorized kind of film version of it. It goes way deeper than that.
It's a great way to kind of sum up how to go around learning more than what is portrayed in the media or on social media or however, like textbooks and schools that kind of try and leave something out 400 really years.
Yeah, something I'd really love to do with the campaign, actually, because I don't want to create like a charity. So I don't feel like I'm in a place where I can commit to making money and that kind of stuff for people. I don't think I could do that. But with the campaign, I'd love to do it as like a, as like an educational resource as well.
Yeah.
For like schools and like, you know, go back to good old TIE. I remember back in the day when I was at school and people would come in and be giving, right, who knows about bullying and all that kind of stuff. Yes. I'd love for it to be a kind of thing where actually it can go into schools with like workshops and go back to what I used to do at school, which is all like at school and drama school, which is, you know, attaching drama and performance into learning. Because I know when I was a kid, that's how my brain really
I'm the exact same.
You know what I mean? So I'd love for this to turn into kind of like an educational tool as well. Not led by me, but led by friends of mine and other great black performers, even white performers as well, you know, to really kind of get this message across that actually the white kids in this school, you're going to be fine. A black kid, you're not going to be fine for this reason. How can we make this equal? Because it shouldn't be one way or the other. It should be an equal way.
And in terms of supporting the Black Lives Matter movement, anyone that doesn't know what resources to go to or what charities to go to, who would you kind of point them, who would you point at and say, go here? They do kind of the most work in this area.
I mean, again, I'm actually still learning, you know, about all the charities and all organizations out there. Like, there's actually so many, like, worldwide. I'm like, oh my God. And I kind of go through them one by one to be like, okay, this one does this. This one does this. This is for black trans people. This is for black people with AIDS and HIV. This one is for black people with diseases, like, you know, whatever, like disabilities. I'm really learning about it myself, but I would say the best thing to do is to just to head over to itcouldbe.net and then you scroll down and we've literally got a whole list of every single charity and organization. Or if you get a bit stuck, just literally go to Black Lives Matter or go to UK Black Pride, and those two are the two good ones for donations and for learning resources as well. But there's a ton of places to go, and hopefully this is going to spark a new revolution of people who want to do what I'm doing and want to put stuff out there and create a platform for good and for, you know, changing people's lives. As I said, it benefits everyone at the end of the day. It just takes those few strong people to go, I'm going to do my bit. Even if my bit looks tiny, I'm doing something. Like I said, everyone's activism looks completely different, but just doing something, saying something, having a conversation is so important. So from that, the ball can roll. And bear in mind, it's only, you know, you can't, we're not going to change it in the weekend. It's going to be a long slog, and it is a lifelong commitment. And you do as much as you can, but it's a consistency to wanting to see a change, and that's where we're going to see it.
Yeah, definitely. And for the people that are in America and listen to this podcast, just go out and vote when it comes to it, and that will, I'm sure, definitely help in the States. So yeah, you kind of need to start from the top and work your way down.
That's right.
But Vinegar, I just want to say thank you so much for joining me and having this discussion, because I don't think I could think of anyone better to kind of explain all of this in a concise package than yourself.
Oh, you're so sweet. Listen, I'm only one person who is still learning as well. Like, I'm not saying that I know all the answers. I just know what I know and can say what I can. I'm still learning. You know, my best advice for people is just to do what I'm doing and just educate yourself and throw yourself in wholeheartedly. Don't dip a toe, don't test the water, just jump in, because, you know, it's going to benefit every single person in the long run. And if you get a bit scared of it, that's okay. It's fine. You know, it's okay to feel uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable all the time, but I do it because it's important. So
yeah.
Just
All the links and the links to the It Could Be campaign will all be on the description of the podcast and on Instagram. So anyone that wants to find them quickly and easily, just go on to Don't F It Up on Instagram, and that will be on there. Vinegar, could you drop your social media links for me, so anyone that can't find us can find you pretty easily?
Yeah, sure. So Instagram, The Only Vinegar Strokes, and Twitter, The Only Vinegar, and Grindr as well, because they've now taken off the old ethnicity filters. So you can find me at Town Near You. And by the way, just to plug something, because one, I've not plugged anything
for ages.
I'm going to be over in, I feel, we're in Dublin or Belfast or both, I can't remember. But we're in Ireland, me and Heidi N. Closet. We're going to be over there bringing lots of blackness to Ireland. So yeah. Me and Heidi N. Closet. So we're going to up the black population in Ireland by like 2.
I will be there.
And we'll have a drink afterwards.
Oh, yes, right. definitely. But again, thank you very much for joining me. And I hope you have a nice evening, whatever you're doing for the rest of the
night. Thank you. I'm going to go on a nice Zoom call with my lovely friend, Joe McKeldry of X Factor. So, yeah, there you go.
Do you want to pick up that name there?
Oh, sorry. I just dropped. Oh, gosh. Oh, I better stop talking about my lovely celebrity friend, Vanessa Williams.
Vinegar, thank you so much and have a lovely night.
Thanks, babe.
Let's speak again soon.
Bye, love.